Fleta Brown is here. Welcome, Fleta.
Thanks, Aaron. I'd like to devote my commentary this time to the poet Maxine Kuhman, because she died in February, and it just feels like I want to do something to honor her. She was U.S. Poet Laureate from 1981 to 1982. She won the Pulitzer Prize, the Ruth Lilly Prize. She taught at MIT, Princeton, and Columbia University, as well as traveling the globe lecturing and giving readings. But she always stayed tied to her farmhouse in rural New Hampshire. She said that practically all her poems came out of this landscape. Some people have called her Roberta Frost. She didn't start writing until midlife, which I find comforting, since neither did I. She and the poet Anne Sexton attended the Boston Center for Adult Education, and they became deep friends. They exchanged poems almost every day, sometimes over the phone. Both of them were homemakers, struggling to do their art and run their families. The book I want to talk about and read from is called The Long Approach, first published in 1985. A lot of these poems came from her observations as she flew different places to read or lecture, but they always come from that sensibility of the woman who's first of all a farmer, who's rooted in New England. She's never far from family or her land. You can tell that by the labels of the three sections of this book: In the Family, Out There, and On the Farm. The book is about what leaving and returning feels like. Here's a poem from the first section, the one on family. It's called A Distant Grandchild Listens to Farm Sounds. He is waiting for Grandpa to step out of the cassette. The voice that sings him Old MacDonald simply precedes the body, and so he waits patiently as the leopard-spotted dog who barks on command and whacks his tail against the wood box. Bumbling, gentle, with a big tongue, perhaps the dog will leap out too after the song is sung. In the barn, the tape recorder takes in the sound of horses nickering as they wait for their measures of grain. The lambs are easy to catch, eyeing in their greed. The Aggie truck that the child loved to ride in coughs, then sputters, playing the beautiful music of old engines. When they went to haul cordwood, he sat up front. He will ask to hear over and over these sounds of Grandpa's devising: the rain of the hammer, the scrape of his shovel, the pitch of his whistle calling the dog to his side, the horses from pasture. The child has learned this language while still awaiting his idol. This is it, this non-appearance. This is how gods are made. Isn't that interesting how she takes the simple experience of the child listening to a tape his grandparents have made for him to the level of that last line, "This is how gods are made." When you expect something and it doesn't appear, that's the realm of the divine. The second section of the book is called Out There. She's writing of her experience away from home, obviously. Here's a poem from that section called Visiting Professor. At MIT on the Oval, my students stretch out like corpses this day of budded maples, like the dead of Beirut in the sun. Here, everything is hopeful because unconsidered. Fierce in their indolence, my students turn themselves over, sunning. This evening, under fluorescent lights in a cooling classroom, we will discuss poems of the apocalypse, which serenely never happens in their dreams. In mine, that one Poseidon submarine carrying like a fish its eggs enough to flood the pond, warheads enough to level every medium, every large city in the Soviet Union, that one Poseidon sub sticks up its snub nose. Diogenes at 90 held his breath until he suffocated. So goes the myth that says how much we want to be in charge. My students will colonize outer space. They will domesticate the solar cell. Syzygy and the molecular cloning of genes will not overpower their odes to the 21st century, their love poems and elegies. Meanwhile, their illegal puppies wrestle among them on the oval in the springtime in Cambridge again, in a world where all is possible. The chrome of new dandelions assaults the sun. We can think a long while about the tone of those last two lines, the chrome of new dandelions assaults the sun. Is this cynical or bitter? I might add that the whole book, all the poems in it, carry the echo of the Vietnam War, long over, but that war is still resonating in the minds of those who are there, who fought in it and against it. And the awfulness of war in general is there. This poem feels to me both helpful and sad. Experience brings with it a sadness and an awareness that these students don't have. Ignorance isn't always a good thing here, but at least there's hope. Then one last poem from the last section of this book called On the Farm. This poem is called Getting Through. It goes like this. I want to apologize for all the snow falling in this poem so early in the season, falling on the calendar of bad news. Already we have had snow lucid, snow surprising, snow bees, and lamb's wool snow. Already snows of exultation have covered some scars. Larks and the likes of paisleys went up. But lately the sky is letting down large print flakes of old age. Loving this poor place, wanting to stay on, we have endured an elegiac snow of whitest jade, subdued biographical snows and public storms, official and profuse. Even if the world is ending, you can tell it's February by the architecture of the pastures. Snow falls on the pregnant mares, is followed by a thaw, and then refreezes so that everywhere their hill upheaves into a glass mountain. The horses skid, stiff-legged, correct position, break through the crust and stand around disconsolate, lipping wisps of hay. Animals are said to be soulless, unable to anticipate. No mail today. No newspapers, the phones dead, bombs and grenades, the newly disappeared, a kidnapped ear go unrecorded, but the foals flutter inside warm, wet bags that carry them 11 months in the dark. It seems they lie transversely, thick as logs. The outcome is well known. If there's an April in the last frail snow of April, they will knock hard to be born. So again, even on the farm, there's a backdrop of a planet gone crazy with war. Even though there's no mail, you can't shut the news out. We may know what the outcome of the pregnant mare will be, but we don't know the outcome of the human race. Maxine Kingman was a great lady, a principled woman. She first served on and then resigned from the Board of Chancellors of the Academy of American Poets because of the poor representation of women and minorities on that board. I met Maxine Kingman some years ago, just before she broke her neck while getting her horse ready for a competition. She pulled through to write and work and happily was able to remain on her farm until she died. Her life and work have been important to poetry and to all of us. Maxine Kingman.